Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Governor Bill Walker's Climate Change Task Force met for the first time yesterday. The Alaska Energy Desk reports that the 20-person team formed by the governor this fall is supposed to come up with a list of recommendations for how the state should respond to climate change. Walker stopped by the group's meeting in downtown Anchorage to offer words of encouragement. Walker described a question his administration got on a recent trip to Washington, D.C.
How can you be a resource development state and talk about climate change at the same time? And really the answer is watch us.
Team members expressed fear at how fast the natural world is changing and hope that climate change might be as much an opportunity as it is a risk. Isaac Vanderberg, who runs the business accelerator Launch Alaska, called it, quote, the greatest wealth creation opportunity the world has ever seen, unquote. Former state lawmaker and Northwest Arctic Borough Mayor Reggie Jewell encouraged the group to be realistic in its recommendations. He said promises have been made to Alaska communities in the past, especially on issues like village relocation. This time, Jewell said he'd like a frank discussion of what actions can be taken and who will pay for them.
Or whether or not they can be paid for at any level. I've seen communities that have been hanging out there thinking that somebody's going to pay for their move. Are we really?
The team is supposed to deliver its recommendations by September 2018. 150 people turned out last night for a meeting about perfluorinated compound groundwater contamination around Fairbanks International Airport. The session, hosted by the airport and state environmental officials, briefed residents on the known extent and potential health risks associated with well contamination stemming from firefighting foams long used at the airport. Airport area resident Amanda Phipps says she moved to the area this summer before the contamination was known and then bought a rental property.
And we've spent the last several months buying supplies and fixing it up in order to rent it, only to find out in October that the well had failed because of contamination. Nobody wants to rent this place. You can't rent a 3-bedroom dry house. Nobody wants that. And I don't want to be responsible for somebody else's health issues because of contaminated water.
Phipps has one of 42 airport neighborhood wells sampled so far that have tested near or above an EPA health advisory level. Studies have linked ingestion of perfluorinated compounds to a range of health impacts, from elevated cholesterol to increased cancer risk. Phipps says she's backed out of an owner-financed deal for the rental property because of the contamination.
We just had to take a major loss because of that. And, you know, that's just a couple months. There's people in this room who have worked 20, 30 years for the houses that they live in.
The airport is providing drinking water deliveries to affected property owners and plans to cover the cost of connecting them to city water next summer.
The airport is doing the responsible thing, but I don't think they're going far enough.
Esther resident Douglas Yates pushed for additional action in light of unanswered questions.
The experts again and again said that there's a series of unknowns. We don't know. We haven't studied it. We're looking forward to more studies coming in. The responsible people who care about human lives and disease and keeping people healthy and active, they are going to want to install the state-of-the-art carbon filters for people who want to continue using their well water. Otherwise, they need to buy their well.
Faced with tough questions about health and property impacts and potential compensation, airport spokeswoman Angie Speer was apologetic.
I can't fix this problem, and I apologize. I do. I sincerely apologize, and I know that's probably, you know, fairly weak, but there's not, you know, a better start to this conversation. I do encourage you to file a claim.
Speer says even those whose wells have not tested within the advisory range can file claims with the state. Perfluorinated compound well contamination from firefighting foams has been an issue around Eielson Air Force Base and a firefighting training center in South Fairbanks for the last few years. Robert Burgess with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation's Contaminated Sites Program says regulators were surprised at off-site contamination around Fairbanks International Airport.
Based on our previous knowledge of where these fire training areas were, and our understanding of how the groundwater moved, we did not predict that it would be heading to these neighborhoods. So our understanding of this site has evolved.
Burgess says current research says that while people should not drink water from contaminated wells, it is okay to bathe in.
Watering the garden is a more complicated question. In some cases, it may be fine. It is a pathway that DEC will evaluate, but right now the focus is again back to drinking water.
Perfluorinated compound water contamination is an emerging issue globally, and the compounds are still used in firefighting foams and in common products like some food packaging, fabric and carpet coatings, and nonstick cookware. Fairbanks resident Nana Paldi elevated discussion of concern and potential action to a higher level.
These compounds are possibly going to be banned at an international level, and that I know that the chemical companies are ultimately responsible for creating a lot of confusion for all the agencies such as airport and the FAA, making them abide by rules in order to stay in business. And I think that we have to address the ultimate responsibility back onto the chemical companies, and I don't know exactly how to do that.
Airports are still required to use and test firefighting foams containing perfluorinated compounds, but U.S. production and use of the chemicals has been curtailed since 2002 as concern about pollution has heightened. Although the majority of Americans still have the chemicals in their blood, the levels are declining. A state contract to provide drug and alcohol treatment to inmates ended at a bad time last year. It delayed services for some that could help prepare them to re-enter the community. At the same time, a controversial state law reduced criminal sentences. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what the state is doing to address the issue.
The idea is that inmates are less likely to commit crimes in the future if their addictions are treated. But a key state contract to provide treatment with the nonprofit organization Aquila ended on December 31, 2016. The next day, the state increased the use of parole and community supervision outside of jail for offenders.
It was terrible timing for this event to happen.
That's Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz, the chairwoman of the House Health and Social Services Committee. She noted that roughly 4 out of 5 inmates have a substance use disorder. Aquila provided treatment in prisons across the state. When the contract ended, state officials say they focused their efforts on 55 prisoners who were in the middle of treatment, using temporary employees to fill the gap. Others had to wait. The state is supposed to be able to treat 240 prisoners at a time with inpatient or intensive outpatient drug treatment. While one new contract was in place on January 1st, 2 others didn't start until December 8th, and other contractors are still looking for workers to operate the programs. Christopher Constant directs grants and contracts for Aquila. He says Aquila decided to end the contract because the state didn't build in any vacation or sick leave for its workers.
We ended up literally underwriting the state's treatment services more than $500,000 in a year.
Laura Brooks directs health and rehabilitation services for the Department of Corrections. She noted that Aquila had agreed to a similar contract that covered services last year. Aquila gave 1 month's notice that it wouldn't renew its contract for 2017.
I don't think there would ever be a good time for us to lose a substance abuse contract. Any time that we are left either without services or face a reduction in services, it's going to affect their transition back to the community.
State officials say the small number of drug treatment providers limited where the state offers treatment. The state replaced Aquila with 3 smaller contracts, with the Salvation Army's Clitheroe Center, Cook Inlet Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, and Norton Sound Behavioral Health.
I'm confident that the contracts that we have now in place are going to be able to provide our offender population with the substance abuse programs and services that they need.
SB 91 is providing an additional $1 million per year for substance use treatment. State officials are still determining how they will use that money to expand drug and alcohol treatment. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
And I'm Dan Bross.